Okay, the Finance and Capital Committee will now convene. Good morning. I'd like to start with approval of today's agenda. If there are no objections, we will consider it approved as presented. Any objections? Okay, agenda is approved. We also have the minutes of our previous meeting before us for approval. Can I get a motion from a committee member to approve the January 16th meeting minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Second.
And seconded. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. So a brief review of the agenda for today. First, we are going to review and approve for consideration by the full board later this month policy on debt management. With the advent of dedicated funding, Metro is now able to issue its own debt versus doing so on behalf of individual jurisdictions. This policy will guide Metro's debt issuance practices and also fulfills a requirement of the Maryland Dedicated Funding Agreement. Then after that, we will have two items involving joint developments, advancing Metro's office consolidation strategy. First, the board will be asked to approve a joint development lease agreement for the site of the Jackson Graham Building. Metro will relocate its D.C. headquarters to a new building at L'Enfant Plaza Station, making way for the redevelopment of this property. And then at New Carrollton, Metro is working with Prince George's County on the creation of a new town center. Existing surface parking lot space and the bus bay will be moved to a newly constructed parking garage, which will allow for additional transit-oriented development, including the construction of a new Metro office building for our Maryland operations. Today's action will authorize a public hearing on the related proposed parking changes at the New Carrollton Station. And with that, I will turn it over to our, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Given, probably want another Maryland member here as well, should we maybe do 2 and 3 first and get that out of
the manager?
I don't know if Mr. Goldman has any comments.
I've not heard him express any.
Okay.
Mr. Graham, you fine with proceeding with the
debt? Fine with proceeding? Or? Okay. Sorry.
Oh.
I just wanted to get
Let's
go.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
So with that, we will turn to the debt management policy presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Our first agenda item today discusses Metro's proposed debt management policy. And with the committee's approval, staff will seek concurrence to move that to the board. As background, and as the chairman said, this region established for the first time dedicated revenues to help Metro tackle unfunded capital investment needs in order to get the system to aesthetic repair. The new dedicated revenues will, again, enable us to go to the market directly compared to what Metro did in the past, which was issue debt at the direction of the jurisdictions. So in this regard, this policy before the committee today lays down the ground rules on about how Metro will approach the capital markets. And to do so, we borrowed heavily from the local jurisdictions themselves, as well as other capital, as well as other major transit properties. I want to point out here that staff has shared this draft policy with all of the jurisdictional members. And what you have before you today reflects the incorporation of the feedback that we've gotten from the district, from Maryland, as well as our responses to the questions or comments that we got from the Commonwealth of Virginia. With respect to capital investment, the proposed policy makes clear that Metro will use pay-as-you-go as well as debt to invest and refurbish the capital assets. It also makes clear that when Metro leverages debt, the authority's preference will be tax-exempt debt rather than taxable debt, given its lower cost and tax advantages for investors. Overall, though, This policy allows staff to use debt in ways that are both efficient and flexible in order to meet Metro's capital investment as well as other financial needs. With respect to execution, the policy allows Metro to sell bonds on both competitive as well as negotiated basis, depending on market conditions, which is consistent with what we do currently on behalf of the jurisdictions. Similarly, the ratings strategy, as a general rule, was seek to maximize funding flexibility while minimizing borrowing cost. And given Metro's contribution to the environment, staff will look for opportunities to issue sustainability bonds as long as they make financial sense for Metro. Finally, and this is a key point here, staff expects to maximize opportunities for DBE firms to participate in each transaction, which is something that Metro has done with every transaction that we've been engaged in at least since 2015. As I indicated earlier, the proposed policy is in line with regional governments and major transit agencies. For example, Metro will issue long-term bonds for long-term assets and try in those cases to match the duration of those bonds to the aggregate life of those underlying assets. Staff will also evaluate credit enhancements and deploy those when they make sense for the organization in order to reduce overall debt service costs. And as in the past, this committee and the board will have final say on each bond transaction that Metro engages in, which gives you an additional check in addition to these policies and the bond resolution that the board will be considering sometime in the future. In terms of controlling both capacity as well as execution. With that, Mr. Chairman, unless there are questions, staff recommends approval of the resolution. Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, I want to acknowledge and compliment the staff on the consultation that has occurred thus far on this. This is a complicated topic. My guess is when we're here a year ago reviewing and approving this policy as the Maryland legislation requires, it will be a simpler conversation because we'll have already gone through the education and deliberative process on that. So basically in this policy, my own simplified way of looking at it is we're trying to give guidance on what types of tools we think are appropriate for meeting our borrowing needs, what types of things we should borrow money for, and then, although it's not very specific in the policy, how much borrowing is a responsible amount, how much would be, how much, basically. So if I could just clarify, this is a policy that is meant to encompass multiple forms of borrowing by WMATA, by which I mean there is the borrowing that's been available to us in the past through our, basically, on behalf of the jurisdictions. There's the new opportunity to borrow against the dedicated funding stream. And then we are, I believe, this is also a relatively new development, keeping open the opportunity to borrow against other sources of revenue that are not jurisdictional contributions. Am I stating that somewhat accurately?
That's correct.
Okay. So as I look at the budget plan, Granted, there's a lot of things that can happen over the next several years, but the real live applicability of this policy as our plans currently stand is borrowing from the dedicated funding stream, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So it may be that there are needs or opportunities that arise for other for the other two types, but mostly this is a dedicated funding conversation.
That's correct.
Okay. So I'll have some other comments, but I want to make sure we get to the others here. So any other committee member or something?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Smedberg.
Thank you. Mr. Anasecki, a couple things that I want to state on behalf of, you know, the Commonwealth and the jurisdictions from Virginia. A couple things that stick out to us, that very fact that the dedicated funding stream will be used primarily to bond against this, that the 50-year provision is one that is highlighted, people did highlight as being unusual in municipal finance. I know it's in the compact, and we do have assets that will obviously last longer than, say, 10 or 20 years. So that's one thing, you know, put a marker out there for. And also the use or the possible use of bonds to deal with pension-related issues. I think people see the dedicated funding stream and the ability to bond off that as really being for capital projects, period, not for operating operating funds. So just wanted to state that clearly, and it's something that, you know, several people did comment on from the Virginia side. So.
Mr. Chairman, you are absolutely right. And first, the 50-year provision is in the compact, and so, but as you recall, we've come to this board a couple of times to issue debt, and those have been in the 25 to 30 year range.
Right.
So there is no contemplation as I sit here with respect to a 50-year issuance. That said, we wanted to stay being consistent with the compact. Mm-hmm. With respect to the other provisions that you referred to, again, you are correct in that observation. And if we were creating a policy just dedicated to capital, that provision will certainly not be there. But because this is a corporate policy, mm-hmm. that obviously will be evergreen but subject to annual board review and changes, mm-hmm. We want it to be as broad as we need to be as the needs of these organizations change and this board makes policies with respect to how to address other liabilities. There is no intention at this point to leverage this revenue source because it is dedicated entirely to capital for anything other than capital asset restoration.
Yeah, and I appreciate that this is a comprehensive policy statement, but you know, as it relates specifically to the dedicated funding, that it solely be used for capital with that clear understanding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Goldman.
Good morning, Mr. Anasecki. I'm not a member of the committee today. You will see Secretary Schlager in this appropriate debt to the banking policy. One thing that struck me as odd was the statement that you would want to consider negotiating with the private bond places in addition to competitive bid placements. That struck me as at least a red flag because the state of Montgomery County relied only on bond placements for access in the capital markets. So I was curious where this idea came from, whether before you went down the path non-competitive
placement, the board would have an opportunity to consider the wisdom of that kind of approach.
So,
Mr. Goldman, the notion of a negotiated or private placement transaction is something that's universal. Some jurisdictions may have a policy against that. But certainly most jurisdictions have that as a tool. And a classic example is what we're going to be dealing with respect to a new credit. Without giving the market an opportunity to understand fully the implications of that credit, the structure of that credit, which does not, it's not readily available on a competitive basis, you are suddenly going to disadvantage the organization. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It's simply that, you know, as long as you're willing to assume the risk and the cost, you know, that's something. What we've done here is to try to lay out the options that, depending on market condition, we will make a recommendation to the board, making sure that Metro's best interest is protected, and the board will have the opportunity in every instance to accept or reject that recommendation. That's what we've done in the past, and that's what we intend to do go forward. But during that process, the board will certainly, you know, question staff as to the propriety of a recommend of that recommendation and a demonstration of how that's in the best interest of the authority.
So that recommendation will come at the initiation of the process as to which way you're going to go, whether it's competitive or negotiated placement, rather than at the end of the process.
It will come at any point that the board prefers that that we come to you and make that determination. In the past, we've come to you twice prior to any issuance, first to get the authorization and then to approve the actual transaction document. So it's up to this committee and the board to determine when you choose to have that conversation.
Again, I'm not a member of the committee, but certainly this board member would like to hear about whether you're going to pursue that path of a non-competitive capital placement or filtering process in its initiation rather than at the end of the process.
Just to be clear, WMATA does not sell debt unless the board approves. So I'm not, when you say the end of the process, I'm not sure.
Well,
it's not like closing, it's prior to going to the market.
And if you go through a process for 3 or 4 months and then you're telling us this is the way you're going to do it and you're going to go to market in 90 days, that's kind of the end of the process. I think I'd like to hear about it if you're starting to consider that. That's what the
Perhaps you could review a typical timeline that, you know, the preparatory work that your office does prior to the first check here, and then, you know, what other check-ins there are, just to make sure we understand where we get our bites at the apple.
So in the past, what we've done was come to the board, let's say, in January, based on directions and indications that we've gotten from the jurisdictions to seek board approval to go to the market. Once that approval is made, we go back to the jurisdictions to give them an opportunity to opt out of the transaction. Right. But at that initial time that we come to the board, we discuss the approach, the amount, what our expectations in the marketplace. Then when the jurisdictions come back, we come back again to the board with a recommendation that includes some of the feedback from the market, all of the feedback, frankly, from the market, as well as the transaction documentation, which the board then says yes or no to.
So with the dedicated funding, the direct role of the jurisdictions is much less than would otherwise
That's
be
right.
Because it's only a board decision in this case.
Right.
But you envision the same thing of our, I mean, our budget documents clearly have signaled to the board that there is an intent to borrow against the dedicated funding resource in the six-year plan. And so we've got that heads up. And then you anticipate, again, sort of a pre-market and post-market stop at the board before you actually would go forward?
I was not thinking of it in that form. What we were thinking of was to come to the board at the beginning to describe what we're trying to describe the need.
Yes.
And have a conversation with the board at that time about the market and what we're hearing from the market. And if the board wants us to come back after that point, we will come back to this board.
Okay,
so to have another conversation. But the opt-out options do no longer exist or that requires a second conversation. But if that's the board's choice, we will do that.
So you've put us on notice that in FY 2021, there is an intent to seek roughly $368.8 million in debt financing for the capital program. That's in the budget document. So when that budget's approved later this spring, I'm on page 16. That first column says debt under FY 2021.
Okay.
So that's our first heads up. And then, sometime after July 1st, the intent is to come to the board with some details on what types of terms you intend to seek, what the structure is for that transaction, correct?
No. The idea was to come to the board. It was going to be this month, but the next month to come to the board to describe the expectations.
Oh, okay.
To describe the conversations with the market.
Okay.
And then subject to how that conversation goes, because part of that, the amounts that you mentioned in 2021, also, because this is a prospective budget, does not discuss, at least in this budget, what happened last year.
Right.
And the gap that we're carrying so far and where the cash flow is. As you recall, we provide cash flow to the board on a monthly basis.
Right. So that total amount of need is an estimate at this time, but that's going to be updated?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
For there's no change for 2021. Mm-hmm. What is not in here is what's going on in 2020. If you recall, we came to the board and had authorization to advance capital projects without asking the jurisdiction for funding for that, because those were going to come from the capital markets. So those will all be coming to the board, hopefully next month, to give you a sense of the size, and then we can talk about the market timing from there and respond to Mr. Goldman.
And that conversation is an opportunity to understand the terms and the approach.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any other board members? Mr. Graham.
First of all, the secretary apologizes for not being able to be here.
No problems. Thank you, sir.
Recognizes that this is an important issue. Have submitted some comments and have not seen the final version of how that might be incorporated into this particular policy. But again, recognizing it is an issue, and we'd really like the opportunity to see that next version and take this issue up again in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yes, just it's my intention that after this discussion, the committee would move this forward to the full board, but there would be that 2 week window where we can consult with our respective jurisdictions and make sure that the language meets all of our needs. Any other comments?
No, sir.
Okay. I want to explore one other angle here, the how much side, which in the policy document is stated as, I guess, principles rather than anything quantitative. But just to put the proposed six-year CIP in a borrowing capacity context. So total amount of borrowing we anticipate doing through the dedicated funding source is?
$2.2 million.
Okay. So, and then the annual debt service associated with that ramp up of borrowing using the dedicated funding source. I have that elsewhere, but...
So it will ramp up from around $40 million and we'll probably get to about 10% of the aggregate borrowing.
So roughly 140 in 2026, right, is my understanding. So what we're looking at is the regular capital contribution from the jurisdictions, which the default plan is that funds pay-as-you-go capital. And we retain the option, as was used a couple of times before, for jurisdictions to finance their share of that through WMATA borrowing, but that's not the dedicated revenue borrowing.
That's correct.
So we'll have that, you know, we'll have that one chunk of the capital budget covered on a pay-as-you-go basis with non-dedicated funds, and then on the dedicated revenue side, we'll have roughly 360 funding pay-as-you-go capital and 140 funding debt service by the sixth year of the CIP.
That's correct.
Okay, so just to get, you know, the sense of how sustainable is this level of borrowing, you know, 6 years into the ramp up and exercise of this new authority, and we're looking at roughly 140 of that 500 base, 360 still available for pay-as-you-go needs, and you know, depending on you know, the view of this board, you know, either room to shift that ratio, or slow down, because hopefully at that time we will have made some substantial progress on our backlog.
Exactly.
Yes.
Again, the picture we have here could certainly change at a more aggressively or much slower, depending on the view of the board and the circumstances on the ground. Again, the constructs here, which is, again, why the region established its revenue, is to address the unfunded capital needs, $25 billion over 10 years. This take care of, you know, the first 6 years. So it is designed to make sure that we're still meeting the goal. Again, subject to board review, concurrence, or disapproval. And
yeah.
So we expect that this will change next year as we progress towards addressing the capital program, and depending on where the market is, so
yeah,
it will be changing.
Well, for whatever amount of time I'm a board member, looking at that trend and how much of that resource how much of the amount technically available for debt service is actually being used for that, as opposed to kept in reserve or used for current projects, is something I'll be keeping an eye on. I do think that while I respect the desirability of, you know, having the toolbox as full as possible, even if you don't anticipate using many or most of those, but I think there may be an area or two where, even if we have the legal authority, given that we review this policy on an annual basis, we might want to rule out a couple of things that are allowed here simply as a matter of policy. And I don't know if that's something that board members from the other jurisdictions would agree with me on. I'm unique on this board, along with Mr. Horner, in that we're talking about money that is not my jurisdiction money. It is Virginia, D.C., Maryland's money. The federal government makes its contribution. What we're talking about here, but that's capped, that's fixed, it's going to be what it's going to be. What we're talking about here is if this is a borrowing method or amount or purpose people don't want to be paying for X number of years down the road, it's, again, their money, not mine. So I recognize that this is any time we're doing this type of interjurisdictional coordination, I recognize it is a challenge, and appreciate what's been done so far. I hope we can get complete closure and comfort level. I'm confident we will by the time we have our board meeting in 2 weeks. Mr. Bulger, you have a comment.
Well, I understand the Fed's dilemma, but you could propose bringing back Build America bonds, and then the Feds would be in the game, which were very popular, but they've expired. But recently, at the Ways and Means Committee hearing last week, they were given a strong support for bringing them back into play.
I would just note that that is slightly beyond my authority that's been delegated to me as a federal board member, but appreciate the comment. Anything else on this item? If not, may I have a motion from the committee to from a committee member for approval?
So moved.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed? All right. The motion passes.
And, Mr. Chair, that is with the understanding that the jurisdictions will have a brief period of time to come back with any final comments or questions, and then the final version will come forward to the board in 2 weeks.
Yes. And any board member who is dissatisfied or has lingering concerns has an opportunity at the board meeting to act on those. So.
Yeah. And I think we should acknowledge that staff has already incorporated several comments already.
That's correct. Yes.
So
I don't want to.
Hopefully.
I don't want to gloss that over in my statement about how we retain all of our options. So
right.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. All right. I guess we will move on to the next item. Ms. Albert, you're up.
Okay. Good morning. The first item before you today is the joint development agreement for this building, the Jackson Graham Building. We are seeking approval for staff to execute the joint development agreement. Just a little bit of background. This building has been long discussed in Metro for at least 16 years about whether or not to continue to invest in it or to dispose of it. So that Metro could move to a different property and take advantage of the real estate value of this particular site, given that it is an entire city block in one of the most dynamic commercial and entertainment districts in Washington, D.C. In 2016, the board reviewed and the strategy, which included disposing of this building and moving into the new locations that we have since been subject of a lot of announcement at L'Enfant Plaza, where our new headquarters will go, at New Carrollton in Prince George's County, and also at Eisenhower Avenue Metro Station in Alexandria. So we're now at a point where all of those projects are moving forward, have received the required approvals from this body, and sort of the cherry on top in the final stage of implementing this strategy is sharing with you our selected developer for the site and the terms of the joint development agreement, which we believe are very, very favorable. Just some background on the property. It's been Metro's headquarters since it was built in 1974. It's 1.12 acres. The current structure is 381,000 square feet. And then the more important elements of this, because it's relevant to the future, is that it holds the chiller plants for three Metro stations, Judiciary Square, Archives, and Gallery Place. Also, an unusual aspect of this site is that the Red Line Tunnel basically runs diagonally through the entire site. So we offered the site for joint development in April of 2019, and we had 14 bidders. Every single one of those teams or companies are highly qualified, well-capitalized, and we were very happy with the pool of teams and firms that went for this opportunity. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we selected Stone. It's a joint venture partnership between Stonebridge, which is a regional company that invests in commercial and residential properties throughout the region, and Rockefeller, which is a New York-based company. They are proposing to reuse this structure, actually, and reskin it, but also add three floors to get the full height that this that the zoning for this site allows. They've agreed to a 99-year ground lease. They would pay us annually with annual escalations year over year. And in keeping with the construction schedule that we have and timing for Metro to move out of this building, which would be no later than December of 2022, the proposal would be to close January 2023. And then, most importantly for our future and our interest in this site, is perpetual maintenance and access agreements and covenants for those station chillers and the Red Line Tunnel. And with the redevelopment of their property, they are in fact going to be providing brand new chiller plant. So this is, again, just an investment in our future and getting the right equipment while we have the opportunity to provide the amenities and the service to our customers at those three stations. Barring any questions that you have, we're seeking approval and recommend approval of the joint development agreement for the Jackson Graham building site.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. Just one quick question. I take it the plan for redevelopment does not include a Wilson Bridge type opportunity for somebody to press the button on the demolition charges?
That has been asked before, okay. And I am seeking every opportunity possible. So if there's anything akin to swinging hammers, we will invite everybody here to
take
participate.
Out decades of frustration on this old girl.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Smith.
Go ahead, Mr. Bolger.
Mr. Bolger.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Any consideration of any improvements with the Red Line Tunnel? And besides the chillers, is there engineering proposing any fixes, maintenance that we should know about?
No. The Red Line Tunnel, in fact, the development plan tries to, and part of the reason that they're proposing to keep this structure is to make sure that there's as little impact, if any impact at all, on the Red Line, on the Red Line Tunnel. But at this moment, with this section, there aren't any engineering needs that we've identified.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Medrick.
I'll go ahead and put a motion on the table that we accept the staff recommendation for approval of the joint development agreement for 600 Fifth Street Northwest.
Second.
There's a second. I guess there's no further discussion. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No? The motion passes. On to the next item.
So while the presentation is coming up, and here it is, today we're bringing to you, we're seeking approval to hold a compact public hearing. And the subject of the public hearing is to add 620 park and ride spaces, these are daily parking spaces, to WMATA's mass transit plan, and also to eliminate 77 kiss and ride spaces. This compact public hearing proposal is actually very tightly tied to, and the reason it's being brought forward is because there is an active joint development project going on, and that joint development project will cause the need to move parking facilities around. So that's the context for what I'm going to present today. New Carrollton, which is in Prince George's County, has been long sought and identified as an important site for joint development. And as early as 2003, the board approved relocating a number of surface parking spaces in lot 2 and 3, and I'm going to share this with you again later, so, and in advance built what is now known as the existing WMATA garage. So it was contemplated more than a decade ago that surface parking lots would be moved into a parking structure. And the condition today is that you have the parking structure as well as the two existing parking lots. Joint development solicitation was issued in 2010. We selected Urban Atlantic in joint partnership with Forest City to be the developer. Development has really taken hold since 2016. The Kaiser Permanente office building, which houses 900 employees, opened in April of 2019, and a 300-unit multifamily building is under construction now. And equally importantly, Metro has identified New Carrollton as its location for its Maryland office building to be located on the joint development site. So the vision for New Carrollton is really important. It is, next to Union Station, probably second most, or certainly third, no more than third most important regional transit hub. It includes Amtrak, Metro, of course, MARC. The Purple Line is under construction now. Greyhound and Peter Pan both operate out of there. Prince George's County has identified this Metro station as its future downtown or major commercial core because it is so well served by this many modes of transit. And there are already 8,000 employees within a quarter mile walk of the Metro station. With our office building and the proposed plan that we're going to share with you today, there's a potential of 4,000 more employees being included in the joint development project. So as we start to look at how to accommodate parking at New Carrollton, because it is an end-of-line station and serves other modes of transit, we know that we need to maintain parking, and we're planning to build on existing surface lots. We've been working very closely with the county to figure out a district-wide approach. And the solution that we all believe makes the most sense would be to build a new parking garage in the place of an existing county garage. So the county owns a garage, Metro owns a garage. The county's garage is at its end of its useful life. It's also not particularly efficient. So what we have agreed to would be to demolish the county garage and in its place move an existing bus loop and put 1,900 parking spaces atop it. That single facility now consolidates all of the mass transit facilities, making way for two new office pads, or could be residential as well, but we anticipate office pads at New Carrollton, making full use of a pad that we call the East Lot, which is a surface parking lot now, and of course solves the problem for how do we accommodate parking now that Lot 2, where Metro's office building and a new multifamily building will go. So here is current conditions and gives you, again, a much better perspective on the number of surface lots that we have. The East Lot is currently 413 spaces. Lot 2, which is where the Metro office building will go, and multifamily, has 300 and some spaces. And then there's an existing Kiss and Ride lot that has 77 spaces. So we are seeking to replace all of those Kiss and Ride, bus loop, and parking spaces into a new garage that would be in the place of the county garage. And the size of the new garage would accommodate the parking that currently exists in the county garage. So net to Metro, when you add up and subtract the spaces that would be added with, because we'd be adding some capacity because we're accommodating spaces lost in the county garage, it would be a net new of 600 park and ride spaces to Metro and the elimination of 77 Kiss and Ride spaces. I want to make one point about Kiss and Ride. The elimination of the Kiss and Ride lot does not eliminate the Kiss and Ride function. We currently, in Metro's existing garage on the ground floor, have a large Kiss and Ride that is very underutilized because everybody prefers the parking lot. So we're not losing that function. So a lot of moving pieces. All of this will be explained in the compact public hearing. But the first step that's needed to realize this greater vision and plan would be to hold a compact public hearing, and that's what we're seeking your authorization for.
Thank you, Mr. Arbaugh. To that point, so what we're doing today is authorizing a public hearing, and then the next step would be at the completion of that, you would come back and the board would be asked to accept that public hearing report and amend the mass transit plan.
Correct.
Okay. Would that be the final step from the board's perspective, because this is an ongoing joint development?
Yes.
That we've already acted on? Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's my only question. Any other board members?
I would only say this is a dynamic project in Prince George's County, and the county is supportive of the compact hearing moving forward.
Great. Thank you. If there are no other questions or comments, may I have a motion from a committee member for approval?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Graham. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No? All right. Then the motion passes. And that completes the agenda for the Finance and Capital Committee today. With no further business, we stand adjourned.